Okay, it's like the third week of spring training, I think. I don't know. The Giants have played 17 spring training games, and they're 7-10, which sounds bad, but really, of course, Doug, it doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't matter. Also, I mean, they were 3-8 at one point, so really, they're on a hot streak right now.
And their run differential, they really should be about 500. I think they're 87 runs scored, 88 allowed. I just want to point a couple of things out. As meaningless as these spring training stats are, the Giants were 13-20 last year in spring training, and they gave up like 222 runs, I think. I was just glancing at it, and so now I forget. They gave up 221 runs. They've given up 88 in 17 so far. They basically played more than half their games, and they're much better.
Remember last year, their entire starting rotation was just a disaster in the spring. Bumgarner was awful. Cueto was awful. Samardzija was awful. I don't remember who else was in the rotation in spring last year.
PV
and Kane were god awful.
And Kane still god awful.
Kane is still god awful, but the rest of them are having pretty normal springs.
Well, Cueto, just by virtue of not being there until this past weekend.
Right.
Speaking of Johnny Cueto, real quick, it's going to be sad to watch him go. But if I don't know if you caught this, Doug, did you see him cheering the Dominican team for the World Baseball Classic? The video he posted.
I did, and it, you know, for like 20 seconds after I watched it, I was like, man, maybe Twitter is a good thing.
And then
I scrolled and I saw the next tweet and I was like, never mind.
Or just someone's stupid reply to that, to what he posted. But for a solid 2 minutes after that, I really thought about becoming a Dominican citizen. imagine Johnny Cueto cheering his, like, if you're his countryman and he cheers you on like that. That gets me amped up.
For sure. How could it not?
So yeah, the Giants are playing better overall. They were 3-8 at one point, but even in that 3-8, it wasn't as overtly miserable as it was for most of spring training last year. Remember, there was all this talk of like, well, it's spring training, the guys will get on track, untracked is actually the phrase. But you know, there was all that talk like it's spring training, they'll get it loose. And already we've seen a lot of, you know, Ty Block has looked good in stretches. Madison Bumgarner's looked good in stretches. Johnny Cueto looked good in stretches. Jeff Smarge's looked solid. Mark Melanson has been a shutdown bullpen guy in spring training. But Michael Morris has looked great in spring training, which should probably matter exactly zero, except it's Michael Morris. And if you're a real Giants fan, first of all, you're going to think I said Morris. Second... it's Michael Morris, and he has the emotional attachment cannot be ignored. And if you're
I will say this about Michael Morris. I was in Scottsdale for a few days last week. Michael Morris got probably the biggest cheers out of anyone when he came into the game. He is still widely loved by a large segment of the Giants fan base. And you know, I can see why. He's very lovable.
It's
incredible.
He's the slightly less he's in the Pat Burrell mold, but like everybody knows he's not going to, you know, try to sleep with them. Right?
Yeah, that's a nicer way to put it than I was going to say.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like out of the gate to get some new listeners, maybe we keep it clean for a little while.
You keep it clean and avoid any references to sexual assault.
That's right. You know, Michael Morris is, and again, I think I mentioned this last week, you know, it's a different vibe that I think maybe the Giants needed, you know, last year. I mean, did we even mention this? I think losing Tim Flannery was this big issue, because it's just like, outside of him and you get the occasional characters like Michael Morris, you know, who's going to be the goofball? I guess Johnny Cueto could be, but he's basically a border. Like he's just passing through.
Right. I mean that's also where we're losing Affeldt hurt.
Yeah.
Because Affeldt could give you both sides of that kind of clubhouse leadership. He could give you the goofball and then he could turn around and be inspiring.
Which he could also
like having two players. Plus he could actually play for a while.
That's right. And he also could be the butt of jokes.
Yeah.
I think that's important too, is when you can people, half the clubhouse will listen to you and find value in that, and the other half will be like, Guillermo Moda, AFL's a douche, and they'll then that will take the other half of the clubhouse. So I guess I'm saying, here's my point on Michael Morris. This is where I've landed on it. If Connor Gillespie is somehow good enough for the roster, I can't see how Michael Morris isn't. That's my opinion. I'm sure I'm statistically completely in the wrong here. And spring training, I think, yes, it's ridiculous to look at any of the numbers and go, huh, there's something to be taken from that. But I would say that when players look good early, it's encouraging. How can it not be? Anyway, there we are. There's the Giants. Buster Posey plays in the World Baseball Classic. You knew that, right?
Yeah, Buster Posey and Brandon Crawford are on Team USA, with Mark Melancon possibly joining them, and Jeff Samardzija possibly joining them in this second round. But Posey and Crawford both played. I think Crawford started all three games in Florida.
Yeah,
and he's great.
The idea that Brandon Crawford, I mean, I'm still stuck in the mindset in like 60% of the time with Brandon Crawford, which is completely unfair to Brandon Crawford. And that is not good enough to displace Orlando Cabrera. I mean, age and all that other stuff just working. There's just something about that. And also, I think the other thing for Brandon Crawford that is interesting is that in this modern era, I'm of two minds. There's a part of me that's like, man, I can't get over that Orlando Cabrera was acquired to still start over him. And this other thing is, not that he was begging for the job, obviously. It wasn't like he was being blocked, but it was Orlando Cabrera was literally an urn that Sabian put out there, an urn with cleats and a hat.
Their other urn cleats and a hat was Miguel Tejada, and he wasn't working out. So, I mean, what are they supposed to do?
But my other thought was, I think I don't want to say cruel, because you can't say that Brandon Crawford has had a bad Major League Baseball career. That's my point. Brandon Crawford has had actually a classically great MLB career. I think us, meaning the bulk of our listeners, you know, in that 25 to 40 mindset, I think we are, I wouldn't say spoiled, I would just say we're a little bit more accustomed to guys coming on the scene quickly nowadays, right? And kind of holding on. But I think growing up, there was sort of that idea of, you know, before we entered adulthood, like sometimes these guys take a while to gain a foothold and build their careers, and it happens gradually. Brandon Crawford has always been a solid defender, but he has actually really has gotten better over the years. But his bat, which was never supposed to be the big thing, he's slowly established a great big league career. And I was going to say what was cruel, but again, not cruel, is that Corey Seager just like was burped into existence and is now the most amazing shortstop in the National League. And it's Rassum, just upsets me.
I feel like Crawford's someone who just is fine with that. He's like, you know, I'll just be great over here and you can do whatever. And I'll just enjoy my two World Series rings and my 30 children.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Seager's a flash in the pan.
No.
That's not what I mean at all. I like that Crawford did have that spotlight for a minute.
Yeah. Corey Seager, the modern Angel Baroa. You heard it here first.
We're going to actually be joined in a little bit by the Dodgers SB Nation guy, Eric Steven of True Blue LA. And he can come in and agree with us on that point. Because I think you're right, Doug. I think you're onto something there.
Yeah.
We'll also be joined later. We're going to split the NL West review. We're also going to be joined later by a national broadcaster and Arizona Diamondbacks lead analyst, Mike Farren of XM Radio and MLB Network and the Diamondbacks, to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks. Remember them? Interesting note about them, Doug. They had the best record in the class in the Cactus League last year, 24-8.
Oh, that went really well, right?
I'm pretty sure they won 24 games in the regular season. So not a great year, but them acquiring Mike Farren last offseason was definitely one of their top moves.
It was their best move in a lot of years.
That's true. I guess one thing that I am like astonished by still is that I'm still positive about the Giants, Doug. So what does that mean?
That means they're doomed, and also you're dumb. It means both of those things.
It means all of that. I think, you know, when you look at the team, it's the same with any baseball team. How do you go into the season? You know, if you're a typical Giants fan 5 years ago, you're going into the season going like, oh, that's it, the window's closed, blah, blah, blah. And I guess for me what happened was they took the Cubs to the brink. And so now I'm like, okay, if this group just gets in, they really can cause trouble. Like, the thing that we were always told about, I guess, the Yankees. I'm comparing the Giants to the Yankees. I can't believe I'm doing this. But, you know, just like the veterans who have been there, that if you're not careful, they'll get you. And the fact that the Giants are probably that team now, I think I really enjoy that.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. I love it. Like, there was a sense in 2003, like after the Giants lost the game that Ponson started, game two, it was kind of like, oh, here we go again.
Right.
You know, like they're going to be the same old Giants. Like after the Giants went down even 0-2 to the Cubs, I was like, you know, they still have a chance. And then I was like, I'm kind of dumb for thinking that, but they still have a chance. It's just a different thing.
Yeah.
And that's what all that winning has done. It gives us lots of false hope that can then be crushed, which is good.
I would say it's good because intellectually you can battle your emotional state a little bit more because you're like, okay, I intellectually could make an argument to my panic, not Joe panic, but my internal mental panic about what it could take. Like the Cubs haven't been here but I mean, they're obviously super talented and the experience factor is probably negligible compared to talent, but if you don't kill the Giants, they will get you. So the Cubs had better kill the Giants, and then they didn't. And it's like, okay, well, now you've kind of invited some trouble here. Because if there's anything the Giants are really good at doing, and it's really painful to watch, let's be honest, if they hang around, they have a really good shot of winning. I mean, that's the thing with this team. The cockroaches thing from 2012... it's true, but it's sort of like, I don't want them to keep testing that. I'd like them to win some games 10-1 this year. That's what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. That'd be good. Or, you know, they could win some games like 6-3 and have the bullpen go like 4 scoreless innings. Maybe
I'll take that. I'm even nonplussed. No, that's not the right word. I'm even whatever about this whole Jarrett Parker is the left fielder now. But he had a great game yesterday. And it looks like, you know, he's locking it down. And, you know, I've said many times I'm happy about it.
Okay, so the weird thing about Jarrett Parker is that he'd actually had a really bad week before that. And he was hitting 200 or so going into that game. And then suddenly he had a 3-for-3, and everyone's like, well, he's the starter again.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to say he's not. There's a lot of factors, but it's so easy in spring training to just overstate one game. And I don't want to, you know, bury this just yet. On the other hand, Giants options, they can do it. They have a veteran fetish. Mike Morris might make the team. So that's the other side of it.
Yeah, I guess it's just he seems like he's got that sheen or that shield about him that will give him that the chance to cross over or master what, yes, any normal baseball player would seemingly be immune to changing their fortunes with one game. But I think it just feels like the Giants want him to be the starting left fielder, and so they're finding any reason to make it happen. I guess when I say Giants, I really just mean Bruce Bochy.
Right.
I don't know why that is, but here's the thing. You can't find evidence to disprove my random assertion. And that's the standard now.
That's the standard now.
That's it. disprove my negative.
Disprove a universal negative. That's all you have to do.
Let's get into our NL West preview now, Doug, because, you know, the Giants do have to play other teams, lose to other teams. But we're going to bring in now Eric Steven from True Blue LA, the neighboring SB Nation blog. Eric also has a podcast, True Blue LA podcast on Blog Talk Radio. And Eric, thanks for joining us. You're in Arizona. You're at spring training. You're on the field right now.
I'm sort of. I'm on a the carpet I'm on is green right now, so it's kind of like a field. So close enough. I was on the field this morning, but right now sitting in a room with a field-like carpet. So.
And your sunburn is what 1 to 10? Where is that?
Oh, great question. It's probably like a 7. I've actually been monitoring it pretty well. I've been like putting on the sunscreen like just about every morning as a precaution. So I thought something was coming on last week, but I was able to keep those nasty UV rays away.
Excellent.
What SPF do you go with? 700 or something stronger?
Oh yeah. I have to go with like the one they use for babies. I have the whitest skin possible.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say a mother.
Yeah, I'm the kind of person where when my socks are off, they like people ask me to take my socks off again, like because my feet are so white. So SPF like 50. I've heard if you're above, there's nothing really above 50. So I just go with 50. That's pretty much what I go with.
I've actually heard if it goes anything above, I think even 35 there's no difference.
Ah. So I've been paying quadruple the cost for nothing.
I think, I mean, seriously, I hope, definitely double check me on that. But someone I know whose father, I think, works in petrochemicals or whatever it is, it's just like above 35, it's the same as 35. Ugh. So, but enough about SPFs. Let's talk about LADs. There we go. All right. The Los Angeles, yes, the Los Angeles Dodgers of Dodgers. They are projected to win 150 games this year.
That's right.
And sweep through the first two games of the NLDS, and then it's toss up after that. But in any case, the Dodgers, of course, I love that every year the projections come out. Like, the Giants are projected to, like, exist as a franchise, and the Dodgers are projected to win, a billion games. But they have an amazing roster. Tell us about it. What are we missing?
I'll be honest. It's crazy. Like, this is the fifth straight year that Pecota has projected them to have the best record in baseball. And, like, it hasn't happened yet. Like, hasn't come particularly close any of those other years. But what I always find confusing is the first day that Pecota projections came out, I think the Dodgers started at 97.
Yes.
And then like by the time I was like writing the article about it, it was already up to 98. And then like it just keeps going up. And then of course like the Cubs were like somehow at like 89 wins, which sounds absurd. Like did they strike in August or something? But that said, I am pretty high like on this particular roster. Like, they won what 91 games last year, and they won the division. I think they're probably going to win the division again, and I think they'll clear that number pretty easily. Although knock on wood or whatever, but the number I keep coming back to for them is 42, and that was the total number of starts by Kershaw, Rich Hill, and Julio Urias last year. And so I figure that number is going to be like north of 70 this year, if all things sort of go right. So that's like a huge improvement to me, and I think that's going to sort of stem the tide of any if they suffer any sort of setbacks. So I'm pretty bullish on where they're headed, and I think another division title at least is in order. And they're, beyond that, obviously, who knows? But I think they're certainly good enough to, do what everyone sort of sets out to do at the beginning of the season.
Well, I think I want to get this in too. I mean, here's what I think happens with the Pagoda projections. Starts at 97. They publish it. They start, you know, the writers, the site managers look at the comments and they're like, and basking and like, people are reading my stuff. And then they just think about it a little bit more and they go, we put that Clayton Kershaw's on the team, right?
That's right.
This is what I think happens. They keep thinking about Clayton Kershaw. It's like, well, what if he pitches? What if he doesn't miss any games? What if he pitches great in the games he missed, like accounting for the ones he missed last year? He pitches amazing the games. I think that's what happens. I think the computers stop working at a certain point. It's just they've got Clayton Kershaw, and after that, I feel like he's the tide that lifts all the boats. That's what it feels like, and as a figurehead, even. He's the best pitcher on the planet, and he's clearly the guy that just anoints them.
And, you know, starters in the 70s, they used to go 35 or 40 starts. Why not Kershaw, right? Like, let's just keep adding to the workload, and that's how they get to that high number. Okay, I'm with you now. I'm on board.
But, I mean, I here's the thing also about the Giants-Dodgers rivalry and how it breaks down. What I like is that there's always the main characters, but what this recent run of Dodgers, you know, post-McCourt essentially, is that they've really gotten good at adding in like Simpsons level quality side characters, but for right. Giants fans, they're just at, like, obviously Puig is, you know, enemy number one for, you know, whatever reason, but then it's like, well, we can't ignore Trace Thompson because then he'll do something, or we can't ignore Tolles, he'll do something, and then let's not forget that Charlie Culberson was good all along. What?
And yeah, Justin Turner?
And Justin Turner. And Justin Turner enchanting them with this magical, mystical elven flute playing. Ugh. His mithril bat. Ugh.
And don't forget the locks. Those red locks are pretty stunning.
I haven't forgotten the locks.
and you're also shortchanging. That's division clinching home run hitting Charlie Culberson you're talking about, sir.
The last two things I wanted to say in a George Costanza voice. Haven't forgotten about the home run. And I mean, Yasmani Grandal, I feel like in Dodger fandom that comes through my Twitter timeline, he feels like he's the player who gets unfairly maligned because he's a catcher whose shoulder keeps dying, but then when he's healthy for, you know, those 2 week stretches, he's a great defensive catcher, and he goes on these like 7 for 11 tears, but seven of those hits were actually 9 home runs, and it's exactly. Just like, it's crazy. And they stole him from the Padres, and it's just it's all infuriating. And Chase Utley, we haven't even gotten there. Jeez. Look,
there's an unhealthy. I mean, it's not unhealthy. I'm overstating it, but there is an uncommon, like, love of Chase Utley in the Dodger clubhouse. Like, I wrote about it a couple weeks ago, but it's like everyone, even like in the front office, like, you know, the so-called stat geeks up in the ivory tower, as it were, they're like completely on board with, you know, Chase Utley, like, super teammate. And it's weird. Like, I'm not trying to discount it. It's just like, I don't think I've ever seen people like rally around a guy. Like, to a man, everyone's like, I don't care what he does on the field at all. I'm just glad he's back. You know, they just want him around. Like, they love him. He's like everyone's favorite teammate. Like, I thought Juan Uribe was that for a while, but like, it's gone to like another level with Chase Utley. And it's kind of crazy how everyone sort of rallies around it.
Doug, he's talking about Chase Butley, right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's more like Chase Butley. That's an original joke. I was the first person to ever say it. I trademarked it. Everyone paid $10 to say it.
I'll credit you on Twitter with that one. That's pretty good.
Isn't he just, to me, I mean, Chase Butley, I feel I give too much crap for him seeming like he's a really old man, but I guess that's the thing. He has the face and the genteel energy of everyone's grandpa. That's what I think is the draw there.
He's like the guy, okay, so if to put that in perspective, like he's definitely the old man yelling at cloud sometimes, but he's also strong enough to like reach up and grab that cloud and pull it back down and beat the crap out of it. So
he's Clint Eastwood.
Basically, and we're all the chair. And so another thing you mentioned too about like the Giants Dodgers rivalry, like all the Lenny and Carl's the backstory characters, but you know, Puig versus Bumgarner is such a, like, I still think it's kind of fun, right? It's kind of absurd on both sides. Like, both guys are kind of insane in their own ways. But, like, what amazed me last year was with the whole don't look at me stuff was, like, I want to say within – it was definitely the next day, but I think within hours they had, like, T-shirts printed up for everybody in the Dodger clubhouse. Like, so what amazes me about like major league lifestyle is that there, you know, there's a lot of disposable income for a lot of guys, you know, not you know, the major league minimum is like $535,000. Those guys, that's a good chunk of change, but those guys aren't throwing around money all the time. But you get your 10 million plus guys, they're going to have, they'll rent a pool table every once in a while and bring it into the clubhouse and do stuff like that. But the connections these guys have to like T-shirt makers like on a whim is amazing to me. Like, you could have like the smallest slight or like something, or someone will just say some dumb comment. Next day, it's like a T-shirt. There's like 50 T-shirts in the clubhouse. Like, they like local T-shirt makers are that's like the business to be in, man. If you know someone on a baseball team, like you'll put your kids through college with enough work just from baseball.
So you're saying that Madison Bumgarner isn't being immature when he yells at Puig? He's really propping up the Southern California economy.
He's kind of a hero in that regard.
He's a job creator. Well, I guess so. You know, every Dodger is essentially an all-star, and you know the Giants counter with a pretty solid slingshot. But I want to get your sense real quick of who's someone that we should be looking out for, or if anyone who's neither a Giants or a Dodgers fan and is for some reason listening to this podcast, like, who should, as a baseball fan, just be considering as if he was on your team, you'd love him, but in any case, you should watch him anyway.
So probably the new guy to this sort of Dodgers-Giants theater this year is probably Logan Forsythe. He was around... With Jesus. The Padres, obviously, you know, so you know, he has some NL West familiarity. But when he was with the Padres, he was like sort of light hitting utility man, Logan Forsythe, and he went over to the Rays, started playing a little more full time, and became like slugging Logan Forsythe in a weird way. So yeah, the Dodgers sort of got him to play second base, which was made it extra weird. They also brought back Chase Utley. You know, he's in a more utility role, I guess. But yeah, Forsythe is going to be probably one of the keys to the season for them, because they struggled a little bit last year. They struggled a lot hitting lefties, and he's sort of one of the guys they expect to help that.
And a consistent on-base guy too, which, not that the Dodgers are necessarily lacking that, but it doesn't hurt for depth purposes to have yet another guy who can get on base consistently.
Yeah, and especially because if I had to guess, he's probably going to be the leadoff guy. He'll hit, like, first or second, I would imagine, like, most of the year. So he's going to be that guy at the top. Probably going to be, like, I would imagine for some opponents, like, really infuriating at times. But, yeah, I think he has some pop, and he's probably going to hit, like 20 home runs wouldn't surprise me if he's in, like, the 15 to 25 range. So, I mean, it's a big range, but, like, I expect him to, you know, be pretty productive. So he's probably the one guy, like the new guy to watch. So that's someone to pay attention to. Andre Ethier, the old guy to watch, because he was basically lost last year with a, you know, broken tibia, and he didn't play until September. He's looking. He's actually out with like this minor stuff right now, but I think he'll be pretty productive. You know, not going to play a ton, but he'll play enough to be sort of be out there against righties and do some damage. So a new and an old guy, I guess. Those are my guys.
Oh, I'm already calling him Fogan Lorsythe. I'm doing it.
I like it.
I'm spoonerizing him from the jump. Great. Well, I guess from your side of the table, I'd be interested also, last kind of question is, when you look at the Giants, what do you think of, and who do you think of, and do you even... Are they just a thorn in the Dodgers' side, or are they just like, well, every year there has to be a team that's maybe number two?
No, I expect them to definitely like sort of be there for the, you know, fighting for the division. I do think the Dodgers will probably win the division, but like it wouldn't surprise me if the Giants won. Like they're everything's kind of still in place for them. Like look, even if they, I know that there's a lot of turnover in the bullpen, but like even if they brought like every single guy back and used the exact same crew from last year, there's no way that they're gonna like blow that many saves. Like they're just bound to be better just by like natural progression, right? So like the bullpen's gonna be better. So that's a plus for you guys. You figure Matt Moore for like the whole season probably going to be like one of the better like number four guys, and then you're basically going to get probably like I don't know like 650 innings out of the top three, and that's really hard to like compete with, that'll help the bullpen, I'm sure. And so, you know, I look at that like Posey was he slumped pretty badly in the second half last year, like. Offensively, and then like Pence was hurt. I look at those guys as like, you know, the guys you have to avoid in the Giants lineup. So I suspect they'll be productive. So I look at them as still this like, it might not look pretty all the time, but they're always hanging around, and like you're kind of like they're this crazy zombie team that you actually. You have to kill them and bury them before you're sure that they're dead. So I'll never write off this incarnation of the Giants. So I do suspect them to be challenging for sure.
Eric, still enjoy your 3-run home runs, which come regularly. we appreciate you taking the time, and you know we know you've got to take an aloe vera bath for your skin and all the spring training fun you're going to keep having. But thanks again. They can find you at TrueBlueLA on Twitter, also at Eric Steven, right? And you're also absolutely. Part of SB Nation. You write some articles. Have you written a Tim Tebow article yet?
No, surprisingly, I've edited a few, but have not written one yet. So maybe this week, God willing. All right,
thanks for joining us, Eric.
You got it. Take care. Thanks, guys.
Right. Bye. Thanks.
Okay, and moving right along, joining us now is a national baseball personality. You can listen to him on SiriusXM's Power Alley. He also does the Futures games. He's an ambassador of baseball. He's also the pre- and post-game show host for the Arizona Diamondbacks, which is how I came to think he's the perfect person to be on the show to talk about the Diamondbacks. It's Mike Farren. Mike Farren, welcome to the show.
Do I have to like take emulants in order to be the ambassador of baseball? I mean, that's part of it, right? Is like I have to like purchase that kind of access or title, right?
No, you sell your access.
Oh, sell it. Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I'll take anybody's money.
Yeah, I mean, don't you know the first rule of kleptocracy? Come on.
That involves stealing cosmetics, doesn't it? Kleptocracy.
That's right. There is a big heist not too recently. Yes. So the Diamondbacks, Doug, where do we start with the Diamondbacks?
So I mean, let's start with the biggest star on the Diamondbacks, Paul Goldschmidt. He had another very good year last year. A little bit of a drop in offense. How much of that was because Tim Lincecum's not in the division anymore?
I think it's real easy to say that. Although I the shock from both Giants and Dodgers people at the fact that Goldschmidt didn't hit like 600 against both teams last year was really kind of, as somebody who's new to the division last season, was really kind of adorable. I thought that was very funny because they're just so used to him dominating. No, you're right. I mean, he still had a really good year. And this is the thing. Like, he was in the top 10 on all of baseball in stolen bases, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, he is – I think he's this weird combination of Jeff Bagwell – and I mean this weird in a good way – of Jeff Bagwell and Paul Konerko. Like, Konerko's consistency of personality with Bagwell's skill set. And he's really marvelous to watch. And you get to appreciate him even in what for him is a down season where he has a 400 on base percentage and maybe the slugging was off a little bit. He's still just a really tremendous hitter who rarely gives away an at-bat and has a real keen baseball intellect. And I think he's going to have a better year this year. There were some mechanical things that I think they identified this winter that caused him to hit the ball on the ground more than he had been. And judging from the way he swung the bat before he left for the World Baseball Classic, and the fact that every time I've turned on the World Baseball Classic, he's been standing at second and then scoring a run. I expect, you know, Paul Goldschmidt to have a pretty typical Paul Goldschmidt year, which puts him in the running for an MVP award.
Absolutely. I would say that what kind of balance is that in the sense of that's a very big positive. You can take that to the bank. Is Zach Greinke, his spring, it's spring training, so who cares? But it's also Zach Greinke, and it's velocity down. And is that any sort of, let's think about this, is that a negative thing, or is it just a groan?
Well, I mean, I think it's not exactly what you want when you start, right? But, I mean, I think, listen, he's got the skill set that should be able to handle a decline of velocity, right? Because he has such great command. You know, really one of Greinke's great tasks is that great abilities is that there's very little variation between his fastball and his secondary pitches. He's similar to Felix Hernandez in that regard. And maybe it's similar, too, in that, you know, his velocity is you're closer to where Felix's was, maybe, you know, I don't want to say Felix had a bump up a couple of years ago, and then it was down last year. Maybe it was the year before that. I mean, I think, you know, Greinke today on the backfields had a bunch of 91s in the first inning, a couple 90s in the second, and then it started to dip a little bit from there. But if he commands, you know, he's still going to be pretty effective. And I think the last season, his year was – the overall numbers don't look great, but he had about a 10-start stretch once he got comfortable where he was really good, and then he got hurt. He hurt his oblique against the Phillies, came back, wasn't right, hurt his shoulder, had a minor shoulder thing that shut him down for the end of the year. And I think that that's kind of the encouraging thing, is that there's this chance that, you know, what you saw in that 10-start stretch was, you know, the real Zach Greinke. And, you know, he has performed like that in the Diamondback uniform. It's just obscured by what his overall numbers were last season.
It was just a shock to the system more than anything, because if you're thinking about baseball in a just a conversational way, oh, wherever Zach Greinke goes, he's going to be immediately successful. He seems very geared towards that. So it just felt very surprising. What also surprising, my transitions are so bad. It's spring training for me too. But,
It's spring training for the podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
that's right. Yeah,
that's good.
So, just, you know, we're working on some mechanics here, fundamentals. I would say that acquiring Taijuan Walker from Crazy Trade Man in Seattle was a shock. And I say that in this particular conversation because, you know, listening to you on Power Alley, one thing, your excitement about baseball is what's fantastic, but obviously you always seemed like you knew the American League a lot more, and you had a pretty good, you know, he called in every week Lloyd McClendon for a while. So it seems like Taijuan Walker versus most other guys, you seem to have, you probably jumped in knowing a lot more than anyone else with the Diamondbacks, and he seems to be having a successful spring. Is there something in the Diamondbacks that you maybe can't tell us, but like they saw it right away and they're like, we know exactly what it is? All right.
So there's a couple of things with him. One, I'll just say this based on, you mentioned his successful spring. I haven't really seen him because I've had a bunch of serious dates that I've had to do for spring training coverage and a couple other things. So I've seen him throw an inning in person. I had a scout last night tell me he's been the best pitcher he's seen in spring training this year by a wide margin.
Okay.
And that was really – now, I will say that 2 years ago in the spring, I believe that that was the case that a lot of scouts walked away looking at Walker saying the same thing when he was with Seattle. And then he had, you know, an okay year. I think there are two things that kind of led to this. Well, there were a couple – more than two things. But Walker still has elite-level stuff, and he's been 94 to 97 with his fastball this spring. And, you know, that's pretty much kind of that's who he is, right? He's added this or worked on his cutter. He's now calling it a slider. He's throwing four pitches for strikes. I mean, those are all improvements. And from what little I've seen of him, it looks like he's refined his delivery a little bit, so he's finishing pitches better. Last year, I think he was hampered by the fact that he pitched through most of the season with bone spurs in his ankle.
Oh,
but
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, he had surgery at the end of the year. And so you've got that. And then you have the fact that, you know, the feeling was you know, not to take anything away from what Gene Segura did last year, because he was terrific, and I wouldn't be surprised if he puts together maybe not a 20-homer season, but similar numbers overall with Seattle. But there was more of a feeling, as you're looking at from the outside, that you could be selling high on him. And how many 24-year-old starting pitchers with frontline stuff are available that have 350 innings in the big leagues and a 3-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio for their careers?
Right.
You know, and I think that that's the thing about Walker that gets you excited, is it's like the peripherals are all there. Like, that's all those things are like, okay, well, this definitely points to a guy whose ERA is going to be lower than 4. You know, he's been prone to the home run ball the last two seasons, and certainly that's something you need to get under control at Chase Field. It's a great hitter's ballpark, but he's a really bright kid. He's a really engaging kid. He is a monstrous physical specimen. I think his shoulders have gotten wider since the last time I'd see him in person, because now he looks like, you know, he was a big basketball star in high school. He looks like an NBA power forward. He has that kind of physique. I'm really excited about Taiwan Walker this year. I think it could be a breakout season for him. And, you know, certainly those guys are not easy to acquire. I generally prefer bats to arms when you're making deals, but in this case, I certainly understand why they would go after Taiwan Walker and why they're so excited about it.
Also, Segura wasn't their guy. You know, they got him from somewhere else. It kind of makes it even easier to part ways.
Well, and a new administration, too. Right. So, I mean, and that was one of the things that, you know, Mike Hazen has talked about, the new general manager, is like, you know, listen, we didn't have the you know, for good, for better or for worse, the bias of being around the player all season. So we were looking at it with fresh eyes. And I know bias can be, you know, instantly has a negative connotation. I don't think it necessarily means that in this case. It's just, you know, your eyes tell you what they tell you, right? And so you saw, like I saw Gene Segura last year. I think Gene Segura was really good. He was clearly behind maybe Goldschmidt, last year. He may have been the best player overall on the Diamondbacks roster. And I do think he's capable of repeating that. But I think if you're coming at it, looking at it with fresh eyes, looking at the way the salaries match up, everything else is the way you're trying to construct a roster, you can certainly understand why you would say, okay, you know, taking a look at it from here, we could move this guy and get a big return, and they did.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the big trade for a starting pitcher from this last offseason. But the one from the previous offseason is also still around. So what's going on with Shelby Miller then?
Shelby has looked, and granted, it's spring training, so you know, take all of it with a grain of salt, I guess. But through three of his four outings, he's been very good. He really battled some mechanic stuff in spring last year. And he admitted that he was putting too much pressure on himself, and I think it all kind of snowballed out of control. But he's had a really live fastball. You know, he's been in the mid-90s. I think he hit 99 in one of his starts. And it's looked a lot different. He finished strong. He had two good starts at the end of the year against playoff teams, against Baltimore and Washington. And he's kind of carried that over into the spring. And of all the questions, I think, about, you know, where the starting pitching competition goes and who will be in the rotation – to me, I really don't have a question about Shelby Miller. I think he's a much more talented pitcher than what his numbers showed last year, and I think that he will bounce back. I don't know that it'll be to the all-star level that he was in Atlanta 2 years ago, but I do think he's going to be a very capable major league starting pitcher again.
Well, I guess I want to get your sense real quick before we let you go of now you're on the other side of the table here, and you're getting more acclimated, I guess, to the NL West too. What do you see from your standpoint, the Giants? They did very well against Arizona last year. But these two teams seem to battle each other in interesting ways. They tend to have a good couple of series every season. But I'm wondering, just looking at them, you know, because the standing rule here is like, you know, the Giants every year, they're an 84 to 85 win team, and that's what they aim for, and then maybe something good happens. But from an outsider, where do you see them?
Well, I mean, as somebody who, you're right, gets to see the National League West a lot more now. Not that I wasn't trying to watch it when I lived back east,
no,
but it is certainly a lot easier. I get to see, you know, I now get to see the Giants in person, or you know, focused in on them 19 times, the Dodgers the same way. I think that your kind of analysis on what the Giants are is pretty similar to what they are. I mean, I think it's a team that's somewhere in the mid-80s for wins. My one concern with them is that they're starting to get a little older in terms of their position player base. They're not, you know, over the hill, but you're starting to get a number of guys who are 30. And, you know, especially when you figure in the injury history with, you know, two-thirds of their starting outfield, the two-thirds that's really set in Pence and Span, you know, that worries you a little bit. I know Buster Posey isn't concerned about the old man neck that he was suffering from this spring, but, you know, coming off a year where he had back injuries, you wonder, you know, if that's an impact for him. And, you know, what's going to happen at the back end of that rotation, I think, is a real question, because, you know, Samardzija was up and down last year. And I think, you know, obviously Bumgarner is going to be Bumgarner. I expect Cueto to pitch well. I think, you know, you certainly saw flashes of brilliance from Matt Moore, not the least of which was that playoff start that he made against the Cubs. But I think, you know, he just has been a little bit up and down as a starter, which is kind of weird to think, right? Because, I mean, he's got such electric stuff. And we remember his second big league start being a playoff game, right? And pitching right. well in it against Texas. Yeah. So I think a lot of it hinges on that. And you know, the one thing about the Giants that I'm not really worried about is the bullpen. Doesn't that seem weird, right? Like, based on what how it was a disaster last year. And I know everybody's like, well, Melanson's going to solve all the problems. Well, I don't think it's actually the Melanson that's going to solve the problems. I mean, Derek Law was pretty good. Like, he, I mean, the guy put up really good numbers in that pen. And beyond that, I mean, they have some guys kind of pushed out of higher leverage roles that I think are going to help them. You know, I mean, I think they've got two lefties that are really funky in Osich and Okert. And I think that those guys are I think, you know, those are pretty good relief pitchers potentially. You know, Strickland, you know, could be more of a middle reliever instead of, you know, having to pitch towards the end of games. And I kind of like the way that they set up for the last nine outs. And I don't know that Bruce Bochy is going to have to play the mix and match quite to the same degree. So it's weird. I think that their question, so for me, and I think it's probably a little different than other people, my questions lie more with the injury risk that there are with the position players and the back end of the rotation. And clearly the fifth start, I think, is a concern for everybody, but less with the bullpen, because I actually think they're in pretty good shape overall.
Oh, when Buster Posey turns 30 in a couple of weeks, we're not going to have a birthday party for him. We're definitely going to be in mourning.
It's going to be a wake.
Like, here lies Buster Posey, right? former MVP outdone by a Molina.
That's right. one last question as a well wisher to you. How are you doing with the move and acclimating and adjusting in? You're like, you're a year in now. How's it going?
I love it. I've been wanting to live in Arizona like most of my adult life. And we love living here. It's nice not moving during spring training. I remember when we did this podcast last year, I literally was unpacking my office. Like, we just moved into our house. I think maybe that day we had moved in. So it's great being settled here. It's a really, you know, I live in Scottsdale, and the city motto is America's most livable city. And it's pretty true. Like, it's a really great place to be. I really enjoyed working for the Diamondbacks organization. They've been great to me. Great people. The broadcasters that I work with, and Greg Schulte and Tom Candiotti, have been incredibly supportive and really taking, you know, put an arm around me. And you know, but my buddy Steve Berthume over on the TV side, it has been a great resource and somebody to lean on, and it's great to see him at work every day, because we've been friends for a number of years. And really, really love being here. I keep joking with my wife, we're never moving. Like, we're never leaving this house. We're never packing up. We moved a lot for a number of years. I just love being here. It's a great place to be.
And baseball at 10 p.m.? Being on at 10 p.m., that's great, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, baseball being over at 10 p.m. is great. That's the beauty of it. Like, instead of being up till 2 o'clock in the morning, I can come home and go to bed and get up and go to work and be on the air at 7 a.m. During the summer months. So, and feel like I'm well-rested and I've seen everything. So I much prefer the West Coast lifestyle. People were complaining about, like, the WBC game starting at 9 o'clock Eastern. And I was like, hey, it's no problem for me, man. Like, I love it.
You start the barbecue right before first pitch. Well,
hey, I made a brisket last night for Texans, and it passed with flying colors. I am in mid-season form already with the smoker.
So truly, your eminence. You are a baseball and you truly have earned it if you're wowing Texans with your barbecue. All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. You're at Mike_Farren, that's with two R's, on Twitter. And if you don't have a SiriusXM subscription, you know, sell a child, sell some blood, whatever it takes, get one. And it's worth it for Power Hourly alone. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure.
You know, Doug, one thing I just realized we forgot to ask him about was the bacon-wrapped pretzel baguette at the Diamondbacks stadium. What is that? Chase Park Field? The picture makes it look great, but I can taste it through the screen, and I want to vomit. But
I could feel my arteries clogging just looking at the picture of it.
The served with honey mustard, I love honey mustard, and roasted jalapeno ranch dressing dipping sauce, I love roasted jalapeno ranch dipping sauce. Do I want bacon wrapped pretzel baguette with Black Forest ham and Swiss cheese and all that? Absolutely not. Individually, all great. And also
podcast covering the important issues.
That's right. Okay, our Twitter questions for the week. Let's see. We ask every week at Macroncast. Send in your questions. You don't even need us to prompt you, but it doesn't hurt. What do we got?
Okay. So our first one is from Mike Foster at Scout 6, our very own Scout 6.
Mm-hmm.
He asks, will Ty Block be our Lord and Savior or just our Lord?
Well, I have a very strong feeling that culturally, because of the way that the... Oh, this isn't a political question. Sorry. I was thinking like, oh, he's going to be our Lord of the Manor. Or, yeah, sure. We're going back to feudalism. It's happening.
We should do that. It's kind of disrespectful not to. I think he's pretty religious.
That's right. I mean, for the back end of the rotation, why not?
Yeah.
If his ceiling is what he did when he came up last year. Well, I mean, he pitched really, really well last year, but you know what I mean? Like if his ceiling is reliable back end of the rotation guy, that's valuable. But I mean, on the other hand, if the Giants are able to get one and a half good seasons out of him, they'll take that too. They really are looking for some players who can bridge into the next thing, the next Strattons or BD or whatever it is, to get those guys in to fill their innings. I mean, I don't think he's going to come in and be the number two guy after Cueto leaves or anything like that. But why not?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if he can pitch, you know, let's say he makes the rotation and he pitches 180 innings with a 390 ERA.
He won't do that this year. They won't let him pitch that many innings this year. He's what, 27? No, he's 25.
He's not really that. He's not young enough. They need to protect his arm. They need to baby his arm. I think that if he shows up in forms, it's fine.
If it's 180 and 390, the Giants are probably going to win the division, I think. but I guess that is me assuming some other things about the rest of the rotation. So maybe I should just shut my damn mouth.
All right. Next question is from Nasty Moen at Christy Tipsy. I believe that's not her real name. Who asked... Who in the MLB is most likely to have robbed Puig? If you didn't see the story about a week ago, Yasiel Puig got robbed for something like $500,000 in jewelry at his house in LA.
This is a great question. I mean, I really have been thinking about it since Kristen sent it in.
Yeah.
Who in all of Major League Baseball? So, I mean, at first I want to just... narrow it down to, okay, whoever's living in Southern California during the off season, which actually does narrow it down quite a bit.
Well, I feel like you can do that, but then you realize you get $500,000 worth of jewelry. You can fly in from Scottsdale for that. There's a lot of baseball players in Arizona.
And no one would suspect it if all the players are going to Scottsdale and he is flying from Scottsdale.
Right.
It's the perfect cover. All right, so we've got to have like a list of suspects, most likely. Who would want to steal from Yasiel Puig is sort of one, but like 1A is Puig's jewelry. So then, to me, it feels like we're talking in a young person's arena.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so, you know, are we thinking inside job?
Oh, Doug, holy crap. This is good.
I'm just, you know, the name that comes to mind, young guy, maybe, you know, people who play with Puig are known to not like him very much.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying there's no evidence that proves that Jock Peterson didn't rob him.
I like Jock Peterson a lot as a suspect here. I feel like Jock Peterson, though, is a patsy for this. I'm gonna step, because what you just said is like, we just followed the same trail that the person setting him up would want us to follow.
Oh God, I'm so stupid.
No, it's Scott Van Slyke. He has the motive. He and his family hate Puig for taking Scott Van Slyke's Hall of Fame bust, I think they accused him of doing, with the playing time. Remember that a couple of years ago?
I do, yeah.
So I'm going to say it's Van Slyke. I mean, Jock Peterson is a really good suspect. I mean, they play in the same outfield. Jock Peterson would know exactly what kind of jewelry Puig has. And, you know, calling each other off all the time or ignoring the cutoff man. Like, he knows, you know, Peterson's like, you know what, Puig has this coming. Just watching him all the time, I can see this happening. But I also feel like Scott Van Slyke has motive and opportunity because he's not playing.
No. Yeah, people, you heard it here first. Scott Van Slyke is a criminal mastermind.
Definitely the Van Slykes are some sort of Ocean's 11-esque family group here. Yeah, that's right. You not only did you hear it here first, but we impugned them here first. great question. That I mean, that's
a fantastic question.
I'm surprised there was not, you know, I'm surprised if Grant hadn't spent all that time writing about Tim Tebow,
right.
he could have tackled this one. Let's see. There's a good one from Steve Svensson, but it's about Jarrett Parker, and I feel like we answered that both last week and we kind of touched on that earlier. I'm going to say I really like what Roger sent in at Rog61, Roger Munter, our minor league guru. It's the 20th anniversary of the 1997 Giants. Will Matt Moore replicate Sean Estes's role?
I mean, that is a great comparison. What we saw of him when he came over is he walked 700 people, but he wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he could fluke his way into 19 wins. I could see it.
I didn't even think about the Sean Estes comp because I'll never forgive Sean Estes for game two of the 2000 NLDS, but that's great. I guess so. So now, but now I'm automatically thinking, like, how does the rest of that 97 team shake down?
Well, okay, so obviously Ty Block is Kirk Reeder.
Sure. Yeah, no, I see that.
I mean, that's
right
just
away.
Natural. Yeah. I guess maybe William Van Landingham is Jeff Samardzija. He loses his job at midseason and they trade for someone else. I don't know who the Wilson Alvarez is in this situation. There's a lot of
I think you put Kane in the Van Landingham since he basically is that now. And then
well,
Samardzija.
Kane and Block can't be in the same rotation. We have to have a Reader, so.
I mean, you're right, but I also feel like we're missing something. yeah, no, this is good. Oh man, these are things to think about here. holy crap. Seriously. Jeff Kent had a really great counting stats season, but a .316 on base percentage, and that's pretty amazing. Baseball was different, man.
Baseball was different.
Also Barry Bonds soaking up all the on base percentage. Well, Bill Miller, Barry Bonds, Daryl Hamilton were all. Oh, and JT Snow were all pretty solid. Man, if it's pretty amazing to think that as completely solid as a first baseman as JT Snow was, that if Brandon Belt had the 97 season that JT Snow had, Brandon Belt would somehow leap into another tier, even though Brandon Belt has had better seasons already.
Right.
It just, you know, just 28 home runs. First of all, it'd be a miracle if any Giant hits over 25 home runs. That's interesting. Oh, man. Well, I think the Matt Morris, Sean Estes comp is so solid, and I feel really stupid for not even seeing that. All right, let's take one more question. Great question, Roger. Let's do one more.
That was a great question. So I think our final question here is from Nick Lyons at Nick King of Lyons. Which pitcher is likely to get the middle finger down after repeatedly shaking him off?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm sticking with Samardzija, I guess. But, I mean, I think – no, Hunter Strickland.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good pick. I was going to say Corey Guerin just because it seems like there would be something about him that would be annoying. And so he'd shake you off four times. Damn it, Corey.
That's good. Corey. That's a really good answer because mine is thinking less of the person who's this is being thrown on. But Corey Guerin, it seems like it'd be more accidental or innocent. Or you know what I mean? Like it wouldn't be – he's not being a jerk about it.
Right.
It's just he's confused, frustrated, or whatever it is. I like Corey Guerin better. That's a better pick. Also, Hunter Strickland can't be the villain. I can't keep doing this. Why are we doing this? Why am I doing this to ourselves?
Like, he already vanity searches on Twitter. Do we have to take his hero status from him, too?
I like Guerin because I like just the idea that he'd frustrate people just by being... Maybe he's like me. He just uses too many words. And he overthinks things. Okay, so... We'd like to thank our guests for this week, Eric Steven, TrueBlue LA. You can follow him on Twitter because sometimes it's cool to see what the other teams are doing when they're in losing streaks. But otherwise, in terms of the SB Nation blogs, I'd still say we're the best. But TrueBlue LA is not terrible, but they are the Dodgers. Anyway, at Eric Steven. And then Mike Farron, one of my favorite people. I mean, Eric's great too, but I mean, like Mike Farron is a lot of fun. So thank you to our guests and thank you for your questions. And we'll be back next week.
Bye.